We're live. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you're watching from. Hi, this is Vivian. I am Vivian Aqua. I'm a certified diversity executive, and I help different companies with amplifying diversity, equity, and inclusion from within by using tools like virtual reality or the Amplify DEI cards that I have behind me to elevate the conversation into boosting inclusion in the workplace. And I just came back from London, so I'm trying to settle down, but I do want to introduce my fellow co-host, Mary Jane. Can you take it away?
I can take it away. Yeah, hi everybody. So I'm Mary Jane Roy, co-owner of Creating Waves, and my main areas and how Vivian and I have first met each other go back are into the areas of stress, resilience, emotional agility. But in the last few years, I've become a real collaborator, also in the DEI field, and with a special interest also in ageism and intergenerational work. Forces. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah. So today we are going to talk about shifting focus from a tight labor market, right? And I'm just going to read a few things out loud so that you understand where we're coming from. So it's about keeping a close eye on turnover, absenteeism, and all the different reasons why people leave, but also understand that the way that we used to solve problems isn't helping us anymore. And I wanted to bring this quote from Einstein, which is definitely relevant. We can't solve our problems with the same thinking we use when we created them. And the way that I connected this to diversity, diverse thinking, diverse thought, right? If you do the same thing, you hire people from the same pool, if you reach out to the same bureaus, and those bureaus are also reaching out to the same pool, then how are you going to diversify your business? How are you going to maintain your agility, especially nowadays when businesses, leaders are dealing with more challenges now and ever that we need a different way of thinking. So I wanted to open up the floor. If you have any questions, please bring them up so that we can answer them. See this as your time to ask us anything about this topic so that we can support you. And I want to bring in the topic more talk than action. Mary Jane, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I think I was just mentioning to you before we went on the air that there's a real difference in all the research that I've been doing since we decided to talk about this topic, and I've kind of done a deep dive into it. So please, people, reach out to Vivian and I if you do want more information after and some of the resource material we've used. But one of the main things that has come out, and this was from an HBR article. And prompted us, I think, prompted you to think of this as a potential topic, is the fact that HR really needs to shift their thinking. In up till now, or in the past, maybe it should have been changed and shifted prior to this as well. But there's been a real leaning towards layoffs, relentless cost cutting. They're just it was an open labor market, so you weren't really taking care of employees. And what the experts are saying now is that repeated restructurings, for example, another area that needs to be addressed, that is this really what you need to do? And it's going to come down to, and one of the topics I hope we can dive into, and I think you're well averse to deal with this as well, Vivian, is about the metrics and why it's important. The right data. And it was also, I did a deep dive into Marlena de Koning's new book, HR Strategy, I think it's called.
Who I'm going to
And
interview within 2 weeks, by the way. Marlena Koning is coming on
ah,
17th of May on LinkedIn
okay, all
Live.
right, then that's a must listen to, people. So it's all of these things take a huge toll on the mental health. Stress levels rise, employees. And with a tight labor market, they know they can leave and they can find work somewhere else. So if you're going to survive as an organization, then it behooves the leadership to really focus on retaining those employees. So instead of what I mentioned earlier, the relentless cost cutting, invest in their training and development and invest in helping them address their mental health issues or dealing with stress better, and what kind of changes could be made in the work structure within the organization so that they're not overworked. So yeah, one of the topics we spoke, and Vivian, you could address it, is on the fact that employees, when they let go, those positions are not being filled. What happens then?
What happens is that the business is having a still stand, right? What happens is that the business or that department is not able to tick their boxes when it comes to their business goals or their team goals or exceed their team goals. What happens is that you're putting a strain on the current people, on the current team members to mm-hmm. fulfill those team goals whilst being with less people. So added to that, let's say it adds stress. Let's say it can peak their disengagement, because the longer that a position stays open, the longer that the current team members have to fulfill those walk in those bigger shoes. And it's not easy for them, right? So I want to also bring in a sentence that I caught from the article. And that is this part that's saying that CEOs are ranking the importance of stakeholders, place, employees even higher than shareholders, yet that isn't seen, right? So they also say that talent, especially acquiring it, is the most critical factor yeah. affecting their business. And from there on, acquiring it, right, how are you retaining them? Because oftentimes when people share the beautiful side of the business, the beautiful side of a business ad or a job role, they don't set people up for success. They don't help them enough to succeed in that job role. Whereas, let's say after maybe 2 to 6 months, there's a crack showing in their job honeymoon. They are experiencing things from a different life, whereas they are comparing what has been said, what they were promised, as not being seen, being the reality that they hope they wish for, providing the perspective that people need so that they can stay and that they can work and amplify their productivity to the max so that your company can achieve its business levels. But I'm not seeing this match with the companies and also outside of the companies that I work for. I'm not seeing this match. I'm seeing a lot of job ads looking for, let's say, the unicorns that are out there that are universal scholar, that have a university degree, that have like a gazillion skills, but then you're missing out on something unique. Last week I was at a summit, Breaking Bias Summit, where I heard from the global DEI director from Indeed that mentioned that the old way of working and acquiring talent is dead. The companies that don't see that and are still requiring for degrees, you are like a gazillion years behind. Nowadays, more and more companies are opening up their job vacancies based upon skills and based upon applying to skills, right? I've seen LinkedIn doing something similar, where LinkedIn is also showing the different skills that is needed. It's not always, 100% matched. But then again, you're seeing a shift. You notice a shift when you hire for skills, and that's also when you can hire for talent and see different candidates applying based upon those skill sets, instead of only focusing on, do I have a PhD or do I have a master in science or do I have something else, right? I don't have these. Right. I have a bachelor's degree, but I do, my way of thinking matches that one of a university degree, right? So what are we implying if companies are saying that we need talent, we want talent, we are shouting for talent, but there is no talent there? That means that we have to apply our way of thinking and see how we can help talent to become the talent that you need. See how they can be a culture add instead of a culture fit.
Well, it's interesting because, of course, then I immediately jump onto my horse that so very often organizations are missing the boat and thinking that we want younger people. And there's two things I want to address here.
Yeah.
This younger person last week that I was talking to, she's in her mid-20s, and yeah. she said, how can I apply for a job that says they want a university degree, but also wants 5 years experience in the field. So again, recruiting, think about what you're doing and what talent pool do you want to draw from. It doesn't make sense at all. And again, hiring for skill set and hiring for attitude is I think a much better way to go. The other thing that
don't exist, right? Ads that are looking for, let's say, I've seen DEI roles in the Netherlands and in Europe where they are asking, like, you need to have 10 years experience in DEI, whereas DEI is relevant new, right? So you're asking for a unicorn that doesn't exist in the European global sense. I know that in the US, it's a little bit longer and they do have those years. But within Europe, you have to be real and be honest about, is what I'm asking, is that a relevant knockout question, or can I be flexible regarding that?
Yeah. And then the other thing that I would like organizations to be more flexible about is to think about the older, the more mature talent that's out there that does have a lot of the skill sets and or can learn the skill sets that are needed. So we need to break these stereotypical myths. It's really about myth busting about the now even in tech, it's even younger. I think it's 40 years, but certainly in most organizations, 50 plusers, if they're made redundant, they're written off, you know, and even they're written off in terms of learning and development. While they may have another 20 years of work experience to before they can even consider retiring. So we just, there's a lot of different things that could be done to look at this tight labor market and say, okay, aren't we missing this huge pool of talent that's out there that we could be bringing in? All right. And so
I mean, just by looking at the two of us, right, when we connected in the, it was a while ago, when we connected, I know Mary Jane's strengths and Mary Jane knows my strengths, right? I've known Mary Jane for quite a while. I think it's now maybe 8 years or so, I think around that line where. Where in the beginning, Mary Jane confessed, like, I'm not a podcaster. How can I do this? How can I support? Now that I'm seeing Mary Jane being techie, being geeky, doing things that I would normally do, right? This is the way that we collaborate. We don't let age come between us. We connect on the commonalities. And if there aren't any commonalities, then we address them, right? We address them like, okay, this is something that I need to work on. This is something that I want to work on. I need your support. How can you support me? And vice versa. Mary Jane loves to dig into research. Oftentimes research are not romantically written. So that's why I'm looking for different outlets where I can, you know, consume the information. Mary Jane dives in deep and picks out the nitty-gritty of certain research so that it's relevant for our training. It's relevant for the information that we want to provide. Right? We are bouncing off each other due to, let's say we have an interconnected reverse mentorship going, a relationship going on where I'm learning from her, but she's also learning from me as well. And that part is not being amplified in the workplace where we are learning from different generations, especially when your workplace has different generations where younger people are being asked to provide much more skills and much more history, whilst they are just because they have 2 years of experience doesn't mean that they are not experienced, right? And also the older generation are being written off just because they are seen as fossils or as dinosaurs, whilst they add valuable qualities to the workplace.
And it's I think we're really as this age group, the 50 plus, and I'll admit to the audience, I mean, I'll be 70 this year. I'm proud of it. I'm proud that I'm still really that I'm really involved. That I've just in this past couple of months learned three different AI tools that I've been working with on another project. So. Let's break the stereotypical thinking. And I'm not unique. I have so many of my friends of my age that are like this. And we are still, I mean, let's face it, we can learn till the day we die. They know that now. So with the neurophysiology of the brain and how the brain works, that we can learn until the day we die. So I think one of the things too, we've ridden my horse of ageism, and thank you for that. I think one of the areas that I really want to tap into, because I think it's really significant, and what I was reading is that if you have informed metrics about your turnover, about, you know, apparently, and this was another HBR article led from one to the other, but the way the financial system within organizations is set up, it doesn't account for the true costs of having to lay off, rehire, reskill, retrain, etc. So the costs on turnover are never really highly defined, and this is where the metrics come in. So I want to pass that back over to you.
Thank you. And it's so important, because this is a sentence that I really want to highlight, like HR, and it's not only HR, right? I wanted to make sure that it's also including the leaders as well, that they need to return to their traditional role by taking care of the employees, but also persuade management to change company policies on pay, training, layoffs, vacancies, outsourcing, and restructuring. And when it comes to the topic that you are sharing right now, is that we have created a huge role for HR to achieve and to do. Oftentimes, it also includes DEI, where I'm just like, HR have a break and split different functions into different functionalities and take better care of your people. Because nowadays, you have, I wouldn't say only the younger generation, but you have people sharing their experiences on different platforms. When I Google your company, what will come up? When I go on TikTok, what will come up? I'm not saying that all these different variations or all this way of sharing how you left the company is great. I mean, it can hurt, you know, the individual's resume. But then again, they are being open and honest. You have different platforms where people can rate your company as a good company or a bad company, right? What is the thought that you want people to leave behind when they leave your company? Layoffs, go treat it gentle, right? Provide, set people up for success. No matter when they are leaving your company, set people up for success, because you don't know the power of alumni's vouching for your business, for your company. And it also seeps through the employer branding of your company as well.
Yeah. It's, it really is about leadership. From all levels of leadership, isn't it? This has to be embraced. this wasn't planned, people. It was a thought that was triggered from what you shared, and not to put all the burden on HR, but to give them the space to be able to create the changes that are needed. And then this morning, a McKinsey article came in and I glanced at it. I haven't really read it through, but it was the fact that organizations are still promoting the toxic bosses, the narcissistic, low EQ types of leaders. And so I suggest to everyone, you know, have a look at that article as well. If that's the case, you're going to have a difficult time with the rest of leadership, or the rest of leadership is going to have a difficult time if the top is not supporting what needs to be done, and has no feeling for what needs to be done, but is totally ego-driven. All right. So
we are not saying.
I think it's an interesting article to finish reading.
Definitely. Sorry to interrupt you. We are not saying that you should simply delete them or get rid of them. We are saying that you have to put some measurements or some policies in place to protect your people, and also provide maybe some counseling for the perpetrator or for the victim, for those who are going through, provide training, allyship training, bystander training, right? So that people can recognize what it is and how they can intervene, but also they can They can have an allyship training of what to do, what to say, where to report. Oftentimes, people don't know these rules or policies that your company has, and adding that as a reminder, right? Don't do it once per year. Do it a minimum of 6 times per year so that people know where to go when there is an incident, right? When they want to share something, and provide psychological safety to do that as well. So addressing, these are all invisible costs, right? So it's important to know the true cost, but there is a high cost in turnover. The moment that a person walks away, and it will take you oftentimes maybe 6 months or maybe even longer, depending on the role that this person has, to replace them. In the meantime, that means that this department or this part of the organization is going through a pause phase. And if it's not going through a pause phase, then you're putting a lot of pressure on the existing team members. And they will activate a pause phase where they're calling in sick or dealing with a burnout or maybe leaving the company indefinitely, right? That also puts another strain on people. So overwork, some people are dealing with fears of layoffs. Be open and transparent about what you are offering, but also look into the opportunities that people are having. And end of the year, there was an article in the Netherlands, and there was something also similar within Europe, that there are so many L&D budgets untouched. Why are you not activating people their professional development? Because every euro or dollar or whatever currency that is relevant in your country that is not being spent on professional development, that means that your company is opening up the opportunity to not grow, to not succeed, and to not expand. How many companies are investing in teaching their employees to learn how to use AI, use ChatGPT or something relevant in an ethical manner? I haven't seen that. I haven't seen none. I have seen some companies being restricted, some companies not even allowing any rules or regulations regarding the use of ChatGPT, right? So I'm not promoting ChatGPT, by the way. We are not sponsored, but it's one of the common platforms that a lot of people know. But there are so many other different AI tools that are out there that people are not using. And we need to do something about that. We need to do something about it because AI is coming at us faster. And if you are not providing the necessary tools and resources for people to grow, then you are causing your company not to grow. You're causing a still stand within your company.
Yeah, and this is what I think it's really well documented in Gallup in any case, but the learning and development aspect is one of the top reasons why employees will leave. Is they don't feel they're able to grow in the role. So if you've got untapped budget, then you know you can put it to good use in order to keep people engaged. And again, let's talk about that quiet quitting that you mentioned earlier. Something but that
let,
I
let me bring up some figures, yes. right? Let me bring up some figures because oftentimes people may seem to think like, oh, here comes some fuzzy words or some new themes. No. These teams were already relevant before these teams were active, right? So you have within Europe, you have like 87% thriving. No, 87% quitting, whether it's quiet quitting or loud quitting, 87%. And in globally, it is, let me see, it is 77? Yes, 77%.
Yeah.
What do you want to say, Mary Jane?
No, just that also with the quiet quitting, one of the data points in Marlena De Koning's book is she referenced it, and I haven't looked into the reference yet, but that it costs, quiet quitting is costing upwards of 18% of an employee's salary. So almost 20% of their salary is in time. And I think that has to depend on to the extent of disengagement, yeah, that the person is sitting in at that at that time. But 20% of a person, I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of euros possibly. And if that's the case, how can you re-engage them? What steps
can be taken?
And that's
per employee. Per employee.
That's per employee.
Yeah. No, these numbers are sad and disheartening. And I hear so many complaints about we cannot find talent or we don't have the right talent. I mean, during the Indeed, during the presentation where I was, or during the summit where I was, the Indeed Global DEI director mentioned that there is so much talents that you already have within the company that they are providing open roles for different occasions, right? So rehiring people within your organization, sponsoring them or empowering them to apply for different job roles so that you have that elasticity within your company, so that the knowledge that they gained throughout the years of working within your company is not lost, and they can teach that as well with other people. So add some intersectionality within the job vacancies as well, opening up not only not only externally but also internally.
Yeah, the internal, that was something that just doing this deep dive this past week about the internal markets, and I thought internal markets, what are they referring to? So I had to go and do a search on that as well. And so, yes, I mean, hiring from within, you know, that this job may be redundant, not needed, but instead of firing that person and hiring someone, why not reskill that person in order to move them up? And again, and, you know, I really do love her. I can say that I met her through our podcast years ago, the Go to Thrive podcast, Vivian, Julie Vinkel-Gigliano. And, in her second book, the first book is Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go.
She
co-wrote that book with someone else, but we interviewed her. And when I go back to see my sister in the US, I'm always trying to reach out to Julie as well, because we're in an easier time zone. It's only 3 hours difference then, instead of 8 or 9, whatever we are. But her second book is all about, and I can't think of the name of it, but it's all about the lateral moves. So again, we need to stop thinking in terms of a career progression being up the ladder, but it can also
vertically.
Vertically.
You can go vertically.
Horizontally. Yeah. Instead of vertical, horizontal.
Oh, sorry, horizontally. I see a comment in the chat. So let me bring up the comment. I see, I hope that I'm pronouncing your first name, so I'll do my best. It's Aura Orn, and if not, please share in the comments how to pronounce it. I'll definitely look up your LinkedIn profile and make sure that I know how to pronounce your name. But you are mentioning the development budget was not used partly because people are not allowed or don't feel safe to take it.
Oh, wow.
That's also another teachable moment, right? If you have a development budget, but you are not creating a safe space for people to apply and also to open up a budget, right? I know I truly understand that oftentimes companies do have a roster or a library full of training, but sometimes they need to also provide access to outside training where they can hire a coach or they can apply for a different set of training that can build up their professional development muscle, right? And oftentimes this is not happening. So if there is money on the table, it's not being used, and you think that's a good save, it's not a good save, right? So she's sharing that I pronounce it well. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing that. And also you're mentioning squiggly career. Can you add some more reference to that, or some more context to that as well?
I've seen that referenced in the last while too, squiggly careers. You just have to picture it as being, instead of a straight line, as we usually do, the squiggly career is, you know, you do this, you do that, and you step back and you move forward. And
it's not straightforward development.
If you can add anything in the comments, please do, you know, but the visual is stuck in my mind. I want to bring up one thing, and I know we don't want to go too much over 30 minutes, I think, but one of the things that we haven't addressed in this slide, but I think is really important, and
is it this? Is it that, or did I? Did
no,
I
no, no. In oh. the in the in the in the previous in the slide in the slide.
Yeah, in this slide.
Okay. Is the yes in this slide is the thriving at work, and looking at the global. 23% of people are thriving at work. So how many people do you think are really disengaged or partially disengaged? It has to be in that 77% left over and fully engaged. If they're fully engaged, I'd say that's the 23%. I'm not sure if I can make that extrapolation, but I'm gonna say it. But then you have to look at, that's not even 1 in 4 of your employees who are thriving in an organization.
Thriving means high productive. Thriving means being
engaged.
Able to tap into the high productivity that leaders are looking for when they want to create high productive teams. But when you have these numbers, know that there is a leak happening. Know that there's something happening that you need to find out, whether it's psychological safety, whether it's the fact that they are being excluded. There are so many conversations that you can have with your team, or that people can have, like courageous conversations in the workplace, to really understand the dynamics, but also to really create those dynamics to amplify inclusion in a workplace. It's, for me, and maybe also for Mary Jane, it feels like, you know, it's rocket science, but it isn't. It's not rocket science. How many people, how many teams are really get to know each other on a personal level instead of only talk about work, right? We often don't create space and time and energy to build that stamina so that we can tap into that high productivity as well.
To build those connections with each other. Yeah, it really is true. And then maybe we can, and maybe not, but leave on this note. One of the other things that can be done, I think, to really reinforce. In fact, let me go back. I want to say one other thing was on my mind earlier. Is that if we look at these low numbers of thriving at work, 13% in Europe, I don't have the data for thriving in life for Europe. I just have it for Gallup from Global. And that is 33% of people interviewed were saying they're thriving in life. So if the thriving, I mean, it is, I'm always remembering something Bob Chapman shared, is that the impact of work on your private personal life is also taking a toll. And there's some data out there about that managers have a more effect on your health and well-being than anyone else, I think, in your environment. So again, this is we're creating something here that I think it's why the shifting focus in a tight labor market really has to start getting some attention of what's needed in the future of organizations. So that's one thing. But I do want to also stress, because we haven't really touched on it, you have perhaps in earlier on, is the DEI initiative. That don't sweep them under, don't make it a checkbox thing. Really invest in creating the kind of strategies that are going to sustain all of your workforce.
Definitely. And also important that you don't shove them or don't put them under a carpet, because DEI is going to be bigger no matter the conversation in the US. I know that Europe is inspired or being inspired by this whole CSRD reporting guideline, where it is making the reporting on DEI relevant and mandatory as well. And those who are not following those guidelines, well, if your competitor is doing that, and if your competitor is gaining more talent and being transparent about their DEI initiatives, 1 + 1 sometimes means 3, where they walk away from you and be captured by your competitors. So look into those guidelines, look into how you can amplify DEI from within. Mm-hmm. And also another thing is that so many companies in Europe globally don't audit their data or don't do any survey or data measurements about putting, you know, taking the temperature on inclusion, taking the temperature on their culture, but yet they complain about the high turnover. Yet there are challenges about their sick leave rate. There are challenges about people not applying to their job vacancies. It's often it is important to reflect, what are you doing to prevent, to mitigate these situations from happening? And why are people leaving? Are you conducting true exit conversation as work? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what that article, the financial HBR article that I referred to, I copied one of the comments here, is establish, and this feeds on what you're saying for DEI, but establish standard credible metrics for employee stress and include them in the financial and production numbers. So a priority has to be, and of course, this is something dear to my heart, is on reducing the causes of stress. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really about looking in general, what are the things that we can do differently? How can we support our employees to better manage the high workloads, sometimes the overwhelm that is occurring, mm-hmm. I think very often, actually, not sometimes, but very often overwhelm that's happening in the workplace.
Yeah. And I wanna close with the following comment, and that is, I wanna bring it up. I was typing it in, but it's important to bring it up. And that is, take the lead on DEI by making the treatment of your employees and the distribution of opportunities fairer, reduce favoritism, and tie rewards into actual performance in a straight performance, in a straightforward way, because this reduces perceived bias and it increases employee loyalty, right? There's so much being shared about employees are not loyal, they are leaving sooner than coming in, right? Look inwards. What are you doing to prevent that? What are you doing to mitigate that? So it was an amazing conversation, Mary Jane, as always. And we hope to do this monthly, where we are tapping into an article, reading an article, and providing a different insight on what's happening with the world, with employees, and what's happening with DEI and well-being in general, because these are aspects that are very important for you to create a thriving workplace and for you to sustain in this VUCA domain.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody. We hope you've taken some takeaways from this conversation.
If you have any questions, reach out to one of us, reach out to Mary Jane or myself, because we shared a lot and we can understand that it's a lot to consume. So let it marinate and reach out how you can win.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.